Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Denzel. It's Tuesday. I just got to ask you, I know this is going to be a weird place to start this program. What is up with all of the alligator slash crocodile videos over like the last 6 months? It is, I don't know, except for maybe that giraffe that finally had her baby. She did have her baby, right? That's not some internet rumor. I have to tell you that I did not watch any of that video whatsoever. I want you to know I love animals. I don't have any animals. But it would, the kind of guy I am, and I know this is going to sound really strange, but when I go play disc golf and I'm out there and there's these squirrels running all over the place, I talk to them. I ask them how they're doing today. You better run. You know, I'm not going to hurt you. And then they run away and climb a tree. I'm not going to hurt you. I wouldn't do that. I talk to them. I know I'm losing my mind. Of course I'm losing my mind. Of course, here in Florida, the places that I go to play disc golf, particularly Taylor Park and Cliff Stevens, there are alligators there in the water that sometimes come up on the shore, on the land, and sunbathe. And I'll talk to them. I don't get too close, but I talk to them, see how they're doing that day. They're just looking at me, and that's just the way I am. I talk to dogs. I talk to cats. I guess I'm like Dr. Doolittle or something. I don't know. But it just seems to me that these crocodile slash alligator videos have been appearing anywhere, and they're all very strange. There was that one from a few months ago, that huge, couple huge gators or crocodiles that walked across golf courses. Remember that? Like something was like 18 feet long, something crazy like that. And I've seen a couple pretty big alligators in my day, having lived in Florida over 5 years. Then I saw recently there was this alligator versus horse, or there's an alligator like somewhere. Was it in Australia or was it in Africa? I forget. I don't think it was in the United States. But somebody was on a vacation and they had their camera out videotaping these horses. And then there was an alligator like sitting on this road, like a dirt road. And one of the horses comes over and takes a look at this alligator. And all of a sudden it starts stomping on the alligator, starts, you know, trying to hurt it. And then the alligator kind of runs off a little bit. Maybe it was a crocodile. I know they're different. One's salt water, one's fresh water. Yes, I know. But then there was that one. And then even more recently, there was the one they showed a herd of elephants. And this is once again, somebody I think was on vacation and caught this. They're walking through like this swamp and all of a sudden this crocodile jumps out of nowhere and grabs onto one of the elephant's trunks and all the elephants lose their minds and they start yelling and bellowing and everything and they start going after this crocodile and the crocodile finally lets go. That had to hurt. I hope that elephant's going to be okay. That had to hurt. Imagine you have a crocodile hanging from your trunk. You know, that would have to hurt. And of course, elephants, they're known to be able to kind of feel each other's pain. They have an emotional side to them that many other animals do not. So they all acted in a herd and went after this crocodile who let go. So I don't know what it is why I keep running into these videos. Yeah, there's puppy videos and cat videos, but you know, alligators and crocodiles, people don't run into them that often. It sure does seem that there's an inordinate amount of them out there. Of course, my favorite alligator slash I think it's a crocodile in this case, video is one where, I wouldn't say it's a favorite. I feel bad for the alligator and crocodile in this particular video. It's sitting there, and it was some like Wildlife Channel or some wildlife photographer, and a cheetah, some big cat, wasn't a tiger or a lion. It was not. It was a cheetah or something like that. Swims across this little pond, gets out on the land, creeps up behind this crocodile, has no idea this cat is even coming. And the cat pounces on this crocodile and bites its head and pulls it into the water. Have you ever seen that one? That was amazing. Truly, truly amazing. And you know that crocodile was going to be dead. Although I'm not sure how a cheetah, which isn't the biggest of the cats, is going to do that. I don't know. I guess that they have to crush its skull on that first bite, right? That's how that would have to work. But that's an amazing video. But once again, it does make me sad for the crocodile because that's the kind of guy I am. I don't like watching stuff where animals are getting killed and lions tracking down wildebeest and stuff. I can't watch that stuff. So that's how I'm going to start out this show. Let's get to the politics side of the show, just giving you a little bit of my sentimental, emotional side. I want to thank my buddy Dave for sending me this article. And it has to do with future Supreme Court nominations and the possibilities. There's an article at Business Insider, although I'm going to suspect it's on the Newsmax site as well, given that this was a story about Chris Ruddy and what he has said. Chris Ruddy, if you don't know, is the guy who started Newsmax. Newsmax, which is supposed to be a conservative website, conservative publication. Christopher Ruddy, who has been close with Donald Trump for many years. Christopher Ruddy is a member at Trump's club Mar-a-Lago down here in Florida and has been, I think, an advisor to Donald Trump or, you know, since he decided he was going to be president. Although it's not like Christopher Ruddy was flying around on the jet. It wasn't like he was Corey Lewandowski or Kellyanne Conway, but Christopher Ruddy definitely has Donald Trump's ear. Well, in this article, Christopher Ruddy expresses his dismay that the Senate had to go to the nuclear option to get Neil Gorsuch confirmed. Didn't like that it had to come to that. Thought that that's bad for government. Doesn't like it. Worries about it. Well, Christopher Ruddy has allegedly talked to Donald Trump since this all happened. And he has made the suggestion to Donald Trump that next time, if Ruth Bader Ginsburg, if it's to believe, because she, I guess, is the oldest and has had some issues, she's had cancer. If she is the next one who is going to retire, I don't want Ruth Bader Ginsburg to die. I hope she lives to be 150 years old. If she's going to be retiring, Christopher Ruddy thinks that this can all be patched up with the Democrats by Donald Trump the next time around nominating Merrick Garland, who was the guy last year that Republicans refused to have a hearing on. I need to remind you, Barack Obama, when Antonin Scalia died, Merrick Garland was nominated. And he never got a hearing in the Senate because the Senate decided, well, we're just not going to. Republicans said, oh, we're just going to wait this out. Barack Obama only has a few months to go until he's not president anymore. And once that happens, Merrick Garland will go away and then a Republican president can nominate whoever. And that's exactly what happened. Well, Christopher Ruddy thinks that Merrick Garland should be given another shot and that Republicans and Democrats should come together and nominate and accept Merrick Garland if Ruth Bader Ginsburg, for example, were to retire. This is the kind of suggestion that Christopher Ruddy is giving Donald Trump. And I've told you that to me, of course this is crazy, but you also have to keep in mind, this isn't Christopher Ruddy, I have to tell you, I've been suspicious of the guy for a long time, and I kind of knew about Christopher Ruddy before he became famous. Every time his name pops up on this show, I think of way back in the days when I still lived in Pennsylvania, which was 1998. The last time I lived there was 1998. I can remember him calling into the Jim Quinn Show, which was a political radio show in Pennsylvania, and me not knowing who he is. And then, of course, a little while later, Newsmax came to be a real thing. I wonder if that Christopher Ruddy from like 1996-97 would agree with 2017 Christopher Ruddy. I wonder that. Also remind you that Christopher Ruddy, not only is he good friends with Donald Trump, Christopher Ruddy has also been longtime friends with the Clintons. And Christopher Ruddy has said some nice things about the Clintons and that their politics over the years as well. This is a guy who tries to portray himself as conservative. Well, this is the latest example of how maybe he's not so much conservative. And he's kind of putting on a show, just like I talked about yesterday, Alex Jones just putting on a show for the attention, for the money, because of all that. Could it be that Christopher Ruddy's doing the same thing? All because, allegedly, that he didn't like this nuclear option, he didn't like what the Senate did. You can, you know, there is a position that you can take out there that you can say, you know what, I don't like what the Republicans did. I don't like that they used the nuclear option for this. But on the other hand, I want Donald Trump or whatever Republican president to still nominate conservative judges. You can take that position. It's certainly not a crazy position. It certainly would be well within the mainstream to think that way. So being that Christopher Ruddy went so far in a different direction is just kind of strange. Now, the big issue is, will Donald Trump take this advice? And that's the worrisome part of it. And, of course, I know, we all know, he has that list. He has that paper that came out well over a year ago, where he had all this list of judges, and he said one of those judges would be his nominee to the Supreme Court. And I believe that Neil Gorsuch was on that original list, as was William Pryor and a few others. But you have to remember something. Those are just words on a page. They don't mean anything. And I can't say, even though I know Neil Gorsuch was on that list, and he's the one that got picked, and he's the one that got confirmed, and now he's officially a member of the Supreme Court, just like the eight other justices are who've been there for years. It's no guarantee to me that he will go back to that list the next time. And the reason I think that way is because of the other changes that I've seen happening. I have to really wonder. Let's put it this way, a little different example, little alternative history, alternative history. Say Antonin Scalia doesn't die a year ago, whenever he did. Say that Donald Trump became president, Antonin Scalia is still alive, there's nine justices, and Antonin Scalia dies in June or July of this year, July 2017. About 6 months into Donald Trump's time as president, he's had Obamacare, the overturning of Obamacare fail, at least that's what he and some of the House tried to portray it as. And he believes that conservatives got in his way. He starts backpedaling on the wall, which he already has, and that the American people are going to pay for it. Mexico isn't going to pay for it. He's already said that he's changed his mind on China being a currency manipulator. And given that what's going on in North Korea, and we may have to work with the Chinese, maybe all that trade talk and putting up barriers to trade, maybe that's going to fall by the wayside as well, which I think is a good thing, but it's a total flip-flop from what he said for an entire year running for president. I want you to think about this real hard. Given all that and all the other stories out there, if Antonin Scalia would have died in June or July of 2017 with Trump as president, does he nominate somebody from that list? Moreover, does that list even come out during the campaign? Probably not. Probably not. And I think that if Antonin Scalia dies, I think that he maybe does go the way of, not necessarily Christopher Reddy, given that this is an alternative history, but maybe he does try to nominate somebody that's a little more in the middle, because that's the way it seems he's going. He's flip-flopping in the opposite direction, and he probably would have talked about nominating a conservative judge. But 6 months into his presidency, he might change his mind, just like it seems like he's changed his mind on several things. You know, no matter how many conservatives liked him shooting missiles into Syria, to me, that was a very liberal thing to do, frankly. But it's a flip-flop from what he said he was going to do before. So it's like in some ways he's flipping to the conservative position. In other ways, he's flipping to the liberal position. It's just hard to say. The question is, if Trump would do this, let's just say that he would find some sort of logic in it, if he thought it would be politically expedient, if he thought it would be the easy way out, whatever. If he just wanted to tick conservatives off because the Freedom Caucus screwed him over on the AHCA, whatever the case, would then that be enough for the spell to be broken amongst his cultists? Would that be enough? Now, I know there have been already some people that have allegedly broken away, like people who wanted him to be an isolationist, and then he goes and lobs some missiles into Syria. And maybe those people will be feel even more that way if he does something with North Korea. Let's just say. It's just hard to understand, and I think that it's not hard to understand. I think that Donald Trump is kind of this way anyway. I believe at his core he is a knee-jerk liberal, because that's what he's been his whole life. And I don't believe that he truly has any conservative principles. He's just doing whatever the other guy didn't do. And there's no logic behind it or anything else. It's just something else. You know what it kind of reminds me of? It reminds me of what Mike Tomlin used to say about Troy Polamalu when Troy Polamalu gets an interception. And, you know, Mike Tomlin would say, you know, Troy thinks he's a running back. He thinks he's this great returner. Well, really, he's just cutback guy. And what Tomlin means is that when Troy Polamalu would get an interception on one side of the field, he would eventually just, in his return, run to the other side of the field. It's not necessarily that he was a great runner. That was just his plan every time. He was not a great interception returner, even though he did have some interceptions that returned for touchdowns. It's just that he was just cutback guy. Well, I think that's who Donald Trump is. He's not a good politician. He's not a good conservative. He's just cutback guy. He's just flip-flop guy. He's just going to do whatever he thinks is right at that second, not looking forward at all to the future. And that's kind of what liberals do. It's just fixing the problem now. Doesn't matter what could happen somewhere down the road. But would this be enough? I don't know. I think that too many good Americans who voted for Trump are too caught up in him. And I think that if this were to happen, if Donald Trump were to come out and say, you know what, I'm going to take the word of my good friend Christopher Ruddy from Newsmax. You know he's a good conservative. He's a very, very good friend of mine. Like him a lot. He's a good guy. Very, very intelligent man, at Christopher Ruddy. I'm going to take his word and try to heal this divide so we can move forward with Merrick Garland. What would that do? Would all those people then still want to vote for him the second time around? I think that I have to believe that would be the breaking point. I gotta believe that. I gotta believe that that would spell doomsday for a second Trump presidency. Because whether he wants to admit it or not, it was not a landslide. He barely won. It's 165,000 votes in three certain states out of how many votes that were cast? About 130 million. Those 165,000 go the opposite direction, and he loses in a landslide. Remember, you're already playing kind of dicey, being that he didn't get enough of the popular vote. He didn't get a majority of the popular vote. If he would flip and nominate Merrick Garland, and I'm not, you know, I'm not, it's not like I just came to the microphone today and kind of made this up. This is a real news story. And it's a recommendation by a person who knows Donald Trump very well, a person who's been conservative politics for 20 years. This isn't me just coming to the microphone needing something to talk about. This is a serious topic. It is now serious, I think. It's serious. And so that's what I'm talking about. I wouldn't come to this microphone and make this stuff up. There's plenty of other stuff to talk about. I got plenty of material here. But this is something real, and it's something that all of you who voted for Donald Trump and defended everything need to think about when you hear that somebody who has his ear is saying this. Here's what I think I also know. If Christopher Ruddy is saying this to Donald Trump, then other people are saying it to him as well. People who maybe aren't being as vocal about it, maybe people who aren't independent media types like Christopher Ruddy is, maybe somebody, people who work right inside the White House are kind of saying the same thing. You know that nuclear option that the Senate did? We know that you wanted Neil Gorsuch confirmed and everything, but this may hurt your agenda as president. Those Democrats are going to work against you and everything. You may need to do something to patch it up. And what better way to do that would be the next time a nomination comes around that Merrick Garland is the first guy picked? Would Mitch McConnell and the rest of them go along with that? Maybe they would. Maybe they would, and that would make them a bunch of hacks anyway. I mean, they're in some ways a bunch of hacks anyway. I don't make fun of them as much as other conservatives do, but it wouldn't necessarily surprise me if they did that. I might be for a couple minutes have to wrap my head around it, but I don't think I would be totally surprised if they said, you know what, Donald Trump wants to nominate Merrick Garland, then we're going to go along with it, and it's going to be bipartisan support, and he's going to get 65 votes in the Senate, and he's going to be approved to take Ruth Bader Ginsburg's place. Now, Christopher Ruddy may be saying this because of something that I said before, in that I suspected for a long time that the Democrats would let Neil Gorsuch slide, and they did. They did not filibuster him. I don't think that they were going to do that. The nuclear option was used. But really, the Democrats could have made it a lot nastier than they did. They just made it look nasty. I don't think it got nasty. It certainly wasn't Clarence Thomas. It certainly wasn't Robert Bork. Those will always be the two nomination hearings that I judge everything from now on against. And Neil Gorsuch's time sitting in that chair in the Senate was surely not that. It'll be next time. If a liberal like Ruth Bader Ginsburg retires or dies, that's when it's going to get really nasty, because then it won't be that four versus four and then Anthony Kennedy being the questionable one. It will be five versus three with Anthony Kennedy being the questionable one, in which it's really just five versus four then, or six versus three. And we'll see. Hey, and we're going to see what kind of judge Neil Gorsuch is going to be. I happen to believe he's not going to be as good as Antonin Scalia. I don't think he's going to be as good as Clarence Thomas. I don't believe he's going to be as good as some of those other guys. That's my feeling right at this second. Maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised. We'll just have to see. But that's what liberals worry about, that the court goes 5-4, even 6-3, with some of these guys still being relatively young, even though John Roberts messed up on Obamacare, but John Roberts, Sam Alito, Neil Gorsuch is is not an old guy. Clarence Thomas is getting up there in age. We'll see how long he wants to continue to be a justice. We'll just have to see. So that could really wrap this up for a while. And then Anthony Kennedy, he's not getting any younger. Stephen Breyer, he's not getting any younger. And then liberals start thinking, well, you know, what if these people, you know, start dropping out? and Donald Trump starts keep going on his way, nominating others like Neil Gorsuch. I'm not saying it's not necessarily, it sounds like a pretty good scenario for Republicans and conservatives, only though if Donald Trump continues what he did with Neil Gorsuch. I just think that there's not a very high probability of that. That's why I think that Chris Ruddy is so vocal in coming out and saying this, because I think he thinks that he's actually influencing Donald Trump with those comments. I think that if Christopher Ruddy was not having any success, and if he really wanted to stay next to Donald Trump, he would have kept it to himself to not embarrass Donald Trump. But I'm guessing he came out and said that because Donald Trump said to him, you know what, I think that might be a good idea. And so then Christopher Ruddy feels more comfortable telling other people about the conversation. That's what I think's going on. So this Supreme Court stuff for the next 4 or 8 years is hardly wrapped up. Anybody who's resting on their laurels and thinks that Donald Trump is just going to continue to do what he did with Neil Gorsuch, I think you're greatly mistaken. I'm not saying it's not going to happen either, you know, that he won't nominate somebody else from that list. I think the probability, though, now that he got Neil Gorsuch in there, has actually dropped. Precipitously, to use a great word. We'll just have to see. But that's an interesting story, and that comes from Business Insider. I hope you'll check it out. One more thing before I go to the break, and I didn't have a chance to talk about this when it happened. The dropping of this mother of all bombs in Afghanistan, when was it, last week, a week ago, 10 days ago, seemed like that and the Syria strike with the missiles all happened around the same time. So I guess it must have been maybe a week and a half ago, maybe almost 2 weeks ago now. But I have to tell you, our biggest bomb, at least natural explosives, not nuclear explosives, but just TNT, what we see for the usual stuff, only 21,000 pounds. It doesn't seem that big. I know it's a bomb, and 20,000 pounds is like about 6 times heavier than your average American car. Average car is probably around 3,500 pounds. 3,500 times 6, around 21,000. 6 times as big as your average American car, whether it's a Ford Fusion or, you know, some Chevy or Toyota Camry or, you know, Honda Civic, Honda Accord. They're all going that 3,200 to 3,500 pound range. A bomb that's only 6 times as big as one of those does not sound that intimidating to me. I know it killed like 90 people, 90 bad guys, as it says in these articles. And it sure does look impressive. And I watched a video of it in the, what was it? Is that infrared? That black and white video that they, is that infrared? I don't know. And I saw it dropped, and you notice in the video, it doesn't hit and explode. The bomb actually detonates above the ground for maximum efficiency. This is not World War II where bombs blow up when they hit the ground. The force of them hitting the ground is what sets them off. This is not the way bombs these days work. They've discovered that bombs work better if they are exploded so many feet above the ground. And in fact, when it comes to nuclear explosions, they're kind of the same way. If you want to get maximum use out of a nuclear device, you don't set it on the ground. You don't have it detonate when it hits the ground. You detonate it so many feet above the ground for maximum destruction, destroying both living things in buildings, bridges, roads, everything else. So that was also interesting to me watching that happen. But I don't know. Just 21,000 pounds, the mother of all bombs. I mean, I start thinking the mother of all bombs. I start thinking like 50,000 pounds. I start thinking like the weight of a tractor trailer on an American road, which maximum weight is 80,000 pounds. That's what I think of. I'd love to see one of those dropped. I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. Let's move on to something else from the mother of all bombs. I guess somebody out there was saying that was sexist. Of course. It's the 21st century. Of course. Somebody thought that that was sexist. I just wonder, one of these days when you say MF, you know what I'm talking about. I wonder if that's at some point is going to be ruled out just to this due to the sexism of it as well. There is a runoff election, another one. We had one, what was it, last week, the week before. And the Republican ended up winning. Thought it was good. It was in Alabama, I guess, to take a seat there. And the Republican ended up winning, even though he won with a significantly less percentage of the vote. And then the guy who won it in back in November, and of course, off the top of my head, I'm forgetting who that had to deal with because I have so much information in my head. But there was a House seat that was open because that person in that seat was appointed to the Trump administration. They had a runoff, and the Republican won, but only by like 6 points, whereas back in November, that seat was won by 31 points by the Republican. So we have a runoff in Georgia today, April 18th, 2017. And there is a, and this is for the seat that Tom Price, who is now HHS secretary, the guy who allegedly wants to dismantle Obamacare. This is his seat in Georgia. And this was a seat, coincidentally, that Newt Gingrich had 20-some years ago. This is his seat. And there is an actual Democrat running, and the Democrats have sunk $8 million into this special election. That is how badly they, in a House race, this isn't a special election for a Senate seat. Of course, a Senate run is going to be much more expensive because senators need to campaign through an entire state. And that can get a little bit expensive, especially if it's a state like California or Texas. It's a little easier maybe than Rhode Island. But this is for just a representative seat, a little House district in Georgia, and they're spending $8 million trying to get John Ossoff, O-S-S-O-F-F, looks like a younger guy, considerably younger than I am, I'm 46, is the Democrat who is trying to win the seat. The reason they're spending so much money on this race is, of course, to maybe have some bragging rights and kind of show that whatever Trump has done so far is affecting elections for Republicans. But the other reason is that John Ossoff is running against, I guess there's like 18 candidates in this race. And it's a weird situation where John Ossoff is the only Democrat running. All the rest of these candidates, and I think there's at least 11 other Republicans running. And the problem also, not that there's 11 running, but of those 11, many of them have gotten endorsements from famous Republicans. Well, you have endorsement from Newt Gingrich for this guy. You have an endorsement from some other well-known Saxby Chambliss from Georgia for this guy. And so they each have their reasons to brag. They each have their reasons to stay in the race. They've had ways to raise money, so they're all in it. And so you have at least 11 Republicans running against this one Democrat. And the rules are that if one of these candidates, no matter if it's a Democrat or Republican, gets at least 50% of the vote, then that's it. that person gets that seat. And so what the Democrats are trying to do, being that John Ossoff is the only Democrat running, so all of the Democrat votes are condensed, they're hoping to get the vote out with the money to get him over that 50% level, while the rest of the Republicans, all of their votes would end up at only up to 40-some percent. So it's possible that John Ossoff gets 49% of the vote, and each of those other Republican candidates only get 5% each, and there's still going to be a runoff from that, and they'll take the person, the Republican, who got the second most amount of votes after John Ossoff. I don't think there's any argument so far that John Ossoff is going to win this with the highest percentage. The question is, can he get to 50%? It doesn't look like to me like he's going to do that. From what I read in this article from Roll Call, the highest he's been able to get in any poll is in the low 40s. And this, as you would suspect, is in a Republican district, which would make kind of sense. That a Democrat runs, that's where they're going to end up, in the low 40s. Unfortunately, I don't remember, I didn't write it down in my notes, how easily Tom Price won back in November. I don't know what those percentages are. I'm going to guess that he won somewhat easily. So what the Democrats are trying to do is they're trying to prevent a runoff. They're trying to get their guy, being that he's run against so many competitors, to get to that 50% mark, and then they can steal this House seat. I don't think it's going to happen. I know that a lot has been made about what happened a couple weeks ago regarding what happened in Alabama with that runoff election and 31% to 6%. But you have to keep in mind the Republicans still won, and he still won by a comfortable margin. It was like 6 to 8 points, which I think any candidate would take. And it was a special election, and the Democrats had every reason in the world to try to show up, try to embarrass Trump in that runoff election, and they couldn't do it. And I kind of feel that's going to be the same way here. I think that they're sinking a lot of money into this race on a wish and a hope and just praying, if some of them still believe in praying. Praying, you know, wishing upon a star, praying to whatever god that they worship, that this can happen. There is another part to this that I haven't mentioned yet, and I think this also may hurt John Ossoff's chances of getting to the 50% mark. He doesn't live in the district in which he is running. He doesn't live there. Now, I'm not going to give him too hard of a time on that because Republicans pull the same thing. I forget that guy's name who won. Remember that guy who won the Senate seat for Ted Kennedy? What was his name? I forget it now. But then he lost the next election and then decided he was maybe going to run for senator in New Hampshire or Vermont or something. Remember that? Republicans do this too, and it's just as bad. But John Ossoff doesn't even live in this district where he's running, meaning he can't even vote for himself. So he's running, he's asking all these people to run for him. Please get out and vote for me. Please get out and vote for me. Please get out and vote for me. And oh, by the way, I'm not allowed to vote for myself because my residency is somewhere else. I think that's going to hurt him. Maybe it's just me. But I even if he was a resident of the district, I think he would have a hard time. But being that he's not, seems like, to use a word, what came from the 1800s, a carpetbagger, seems like he's one of those just kind of rolling into town and looking to get some votes. And, you know, I don't think that's going to fly there. I think that may hurt his chances just enough that even some Democrats couldn't be happy about that. And I remind you, it's a special election, which means turnout isn't going to be that great anyway. So there's going to be a runoff after this. It's going to be John Ossoff against one of these guys, or maybe there could be a female running in this race. I don't know any of the names of the other the Republicans who are running. Could be some women in there. Whoever wins on the Republican side, it'll end up being that person against John Ossoff, and that other person, that Republican's going to win. That's still what, just the way it feels to me. But is it really, was it really so bad? I have a question for Democrats out there. Did you really have to go and find a guy who's not, doesn't even live in the district? This district, I'm sure it has, how many people in it? 50,000 people, 100,000 people, 200,000 people. And they couldn't find one Democrat, prominent Democrat, a good guy, a good woman, Democrat, you know, pro-choice, hates Trump, loves hate speech laws, loves college campuses and safe spaces and all of that. You're telling me they couldn't find one person like that in this district to run? If the Democrats were going to take advice from me, this is what I would tell them. Here are a couple things you need to stop doing. First of all, you need to stop propping up old candidates. You have to take a serious look at why the Republicans seem like the youth party. Now, granted, they may not get a majority of the youth vote, but you look at their bench for the next 20, 30 years, and you see a lot of 40-year-olds, some 50-year-olds. Granted, the guy they ended up electing was a 70-year-old, but that was an exception to the rule. And the truth is that young people, younger people in their 40s, at least when it comes to politics, young people, 40s, 50s, running for office is extremely welcomed on the Republican side. Absolutely. Doesn't look like that case on the Democrat side. It just doesn't. You didn't have any 40-some-year-olds or 50-some, you know, early 50-some-year-olds who tried to run for president this time around. Yes, we know. You have Barack Obama, who's still in his 50s. At least as politicians go, he's a relatively young guy, and good for him. But who else you got? Really, who else you got? It seems to me that Democrats have a backup problem. They don't have a good bench. They don't have a good bullpen to come in when their starting pitcher, who was really Hillary Clinton, I guess, failed. They should be working on that. If they don't want to continue to their politicians on their side to get older and older and older and seemingly get more and more and more out of touch. Second, they need to figure out a way to be figure out how to branch out from the urban areas of the United States. That was obvious in this previous election in 2016. That's one of the reasons that Donald Trump won. Outside of the cities, Democrats have no influence whatsoever. Zero. That's why Donald Trump can lose by millions and millions and millions and millions of votes in the urban areas of the United States, whatever you call that, from Tampa to Miami to LA to New York, so San Francisco to Chicago, all of these areas, populated, densely populated areas, but in the rest of the country, he can just destroy Hillary Clinton. And it's gotten to the point where the Electoral College, at least at this point, skews, you could say, in the direction of a candidate who can get those country voters, those people outside of the urban areas. That's just the way it's set up now. Might change the next time around for redistricting. We'll just have to see. And another suggestion would be, and this is to both parties, how about just picking people that end up, you know, living in the state they're going to run or in the district that they're going to run, and they just haven't moved in there last week, that they've been there for several years. How about that? I know if John Ossoff doesn't get to 50% and he has to go to a runoff and then loses there, Democrats are going to come up with all sorts of excuses why that happened. Well, it should just been he ran against the Republicans. He won. He got the most vote. Just should have left it at that. There's going to be that. There's going to be that there was cheating. And none of them are going to sit back and say, maybe we shouldn't have nominated some guy or picked some guy who doesn't even live in the district. Maybe that was a negative influence on the outcome. Granted, you know, I think the Republican Party has issues as well. And I think that they were covered up by Donald Trump winning. I think that Donald Trump winning only put off the inevitable introspection that party needs to do. I'm not part of the party anymore, but that's what I think. But Democrats, they have their issues as well. And in fact, I would say, at least in modern history, the Democrat Party and the Republican Party have more problems than they've ever had together in a long time. Granted, the Republican Party had issues in the 70s because of Watergate, while the Democrat Party was just fine. And then you could say, I guess, during the 1990s, middle, late 1990s, Republican Party was great. Democrats, although they looked fine, they really weren't. They had a president who had given in on some things for the Republicans, Social Security reform and a couple, or entitlement reform, some other things. And then it seemed like in 2006, the Republican Party was in disarray. And Democrats win the House and the Senate, then they win the presidency, and then the Republican Party gets its act together in 2010. Well, right now, in 2017, despite the Republicans holding the House and the Senate and the White House, I think there are underlying problems that I think are going to continue to be exposed on the Republican side as the Trump administration goes forward. And then I think the Democrats have issues too, those being at least some of the reasons that I just mentioned. So they're both having problems right now. It's a very weird time, I think, a unique time in political history. Let's move on to something else. I read this article a couple different places that the night of the election in 2016, that Tuesday, what was it, November 6th, November 5th, November 7th, whatever it was, Barack Obama on that Tuesday night, as the returns were coming in, it's at one point late in the evening, called Hillary Clinton and said, "You should concede." And she blew him off. Now, the story goes, you know, and see, this is one of those, I'm going to get to that in a second. I'll get to hold on that. Hold on, just put that off to the side. Barack Obama allegedly called Hillary Clinton once he saw the returns from Wisconsin coming in. He understood that if Hillary was going to lose Wisconsin, then there was no hope of her really winning. That's when he saw that she lost Wisconsin, he called her up and said, "You know, I think you should concede," and she blew him off. And I'm reading that he called her a couple times and she blew him off. Wasn't going to do it. Still didn't believe it. And Barack Obama actually called her good friend John Podesta and tried to talk to him. And John Podesta went to Hillary and she still didn't do anything. This is going to be all detailed. There's a book coming out that details all this. Is it called Shattered or something like that? But there's a book coming out. And then finally, we know that finally the next day, Hillary finally conceded that Wednesday morning. Well, after it was obvious to everybody else that she had lost. And the story also goes that she, at that point, talked to Barack Obama on that Wednesday and then apologized to him for not listening to him in the first place. You know, she apologized to her president saying, "You know, I should have taken your advice." Or maybe she was apologizing that she didn't run a better campaign. You'll have to read the book, I guess, to find out what context was that apology. Was she apologizing to him because she blew him off? Or was she apologizing to him because she couldn't keep the White House in Democrat hands? I don't know. Maybe it's an apology for both. But, you know, I read this, and I think what we're seeing is actually one of the reasons that I think that Hillary Clinton lost. Right in this very simple story that I read at Red State and a couple other places. This is a story that once again portrays Barack Obama in a very good light and Hillary Clinton in not so great a light. And see, this is, I think that we as conservatives, we miss this. We think because the liberal media is so skewed, that the media views all Democrats the same way, that they're going to come to the defense of all of them. And we find in this story, and there are many other examples of that, many other examples of this, that it's just not true. That there is, like, even among the media who are liberal and Democrat, there is a hierarchy of the people that they're really, 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 really going to go to bat for, and then those other ones that they're not going to go to bat for as much. They're still going to defend them, but certainly not to the end. I think this is one of the reasons that Hillary Clinton lost, is that in their minds, for the media, Barack Obama is still a better person, a better politician, more liberal, everything else, than she is. And you know what? They're right. All of those things are absolutely 100% correct. And I think we miss those things when we just lump everything together into one pot, media and Democrats all swimming in the same swimming pool together. I think that's a mistake on our part. But this is another story. I'm going to guess it happened, that portrays Hillary Clinton in a negative light. Just doesn't want to concede, just doesn't want to give in. Obvious to even the president of the United States in her own party that she's going to lose, and she blows him off despite what he did for her. Secretary of State coming to her defense, you know, in these issues that were, you know, happened while she was at the State Department with Benghazi and other things, the emails, all of it. And here he is trying to do her a favor, trying to give her some good advice, just concede, didn't allegedly want to get this thing too crazy or anything, and she wouldn't give in. It's a very interesting insight, I think. Very interesting, and I hope that conservatives can learn this. That although we portrayed, not me, but conservatives portrayed Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama as being the same, it's obvious that the media didn't quite feel the same way. Yes, they wanted Hillary to win. Yes. But there was a lot less love out there for her. They went along with her, I think, because she was the Democrat, because she was liberal, not because of anything else. That's what I believe. And if all those liberals out there who think that Hillary Clinton didn't win because of misogyny and sexism and this and that and other thing, you need to take a long look at people who run your party and everything else and those types of people. And that's where you're going to find part of the reason. Hillary was the main problem. But you just have a bunch of people who running the party and still thought that Barack Obama was a better candidate than Hillary Clinton. And I'm just not so sure they worked as hard for Hillary Clinton as they did for Barack Obama. I know she got a ton of votes and a lot of people showed up for her, and good for her. She got way more votes than I thought she would. But even with this story, it shows that when it comes down to it, media is going to continue to portray Barack Obama in a lot better light than Hillary Clinton. That's the reason she lost. But I gotta go. You can find this program Monday through Friday, 2 a.m. this morning, 2 a.m. Eastern in the United States at RedStateTalkRadio.com. Also find it on Podomatic and iTunes and on Twitter, USA Podcast. My other show, Unfound, Once again, breaking records this week. You should be listening. Find it at Podomatic and iTunes. Follow that Twitter feed, Unfound Podcast. Comes out every Friday. I gotta go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.